corporate morning on this warm and balmy Friday morning here in Columbus. I'm Christopher Purdy, pleased to welcome you to today's edition of All Sides Weekend. We're going to spend the next hour talking about the arts and entertainment and culture in Central Ohio. And three of my favorite people are here. One is doing us a great favor by coming in at the last minute. She is Peggy Creadai, soprano, director of Opera Columbus as well. Peggy wears several hats, and I'm delighted that she was able to come and be with us this morning. Thank you, Peggy.
Absolutely.
Bill Connor is the president and chief executive officer of CAPA, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, and always has great things to say. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you very much.
And Steve Geyer is here, the executive director, artistic director, and everything director of Shadowbox, which is kind of reinventing collaboration with the arts here in Central Ohio. Thanks for coming in, Steve, this morning.
It's a pleasure.
We'll be talking about the arts and some breaking news here from campus, and then we will invite your phone calls. You can also send an email to us at WOSU.org. Let's begin. Peggy, you arrived breathless this morning as Bill was a little more laid back, but he was here too. You had just come from an announcement on campus. Can you tell us what's going on?
It's really exciting what's happening, and it's bleeding throughout Columbus. The arts just coming alive on campus. They're starting a new arts district. It'll be downtown by the campus on High Street, but it goes all the way down High Street into the city because of the collaborations with the organizations downtown.
Bill, how is that going to work?
Well, I think it's been led by our new provost here at the university, and it'll be clustering a bunch of existing facilities with new facilities and then orienting them towards High Street. So it'll be very welcoming. And then these new collaborations with music department, the vocal department within the music department, theater, dance, all of these now are all happening in the downtown as well. And CAPA entered into a favored nations agreement with the university, so now the university is using all of the CAPA facilities as well.
There have always been students and faculty who have either performed or worked under contract with some of your organizations, but what you're telling me now is there are going to be an actual written down contracted relationship between the university and downtown.
There is. The university's established a town gown committee, and that group has really kind of shepherded this vision. The university has already entered into an agreement, a written agreement with CAPA with regards to this favored nations agreement for the Lincoln Theater, the Southern, the Palace, the Reif Theaters, soon this new church that we're renovating into a recital hall. And I think the relationships are pretty organic. Things are flowing very effortlessly between faculty, students, particularly graduate students. I think that's an emphasis, is to provide more professional opportunities for the graduate students.
So will they work for you for credit or salary? And also, would the two of you be teaching? You'd be great at both of you. The three of you would be marvelous at teaching, I would think, in the university.
Well, in Opera Land, we have the music students have taken over our Opera Goes to School program. So I'm directing them on Tuesdays and Fridays, and I'm taking them through a professional experience. There's nothing, I'm not trying to make it academic. I'm trying to give them a realistic experience that they'll have once they leave school. So they're doing fabulous. These are really talented students.
I was at a concert last night at Weigel Hall, a graduate concert for a young soprano and some colleagues, and
was that Chelsea's?
Yes,
recital?
It was professional level, no question. Yeah. It was anything as good as anything I've heard in New York or anywhere else. It's
absolutely
wonderful.
I know the three singers that were in that, and they've been engaged with Opera Columbus quite a bit. You know, one of them too, John Nevergall.
John Nevergall and Robert Kerr, who's taking off, and
and
Chelsea Hart was magnificent.
Oh, I love that girl.
Ed Bach, who is in orchestra when he plays the piano.
Mm-hmm.
This conversation gives me goosebumps, because it's very the coincidence that all three of us know all of those young people who had a recital. That's something that would have never have happened 2 years ago.
I believe
that's
you.
True.
I think that's true. And Steve,
this
kind of campus town gown initiative, does this have any effect on Shadowbox? You have quite a reach already. How does this affect Shadowbox?
Well, the beauty of it for us, honestly, has as much to do with the fact that it supports the entire arts community. You know, when we see other people succeeding in the arts, it raises the overall cultural awareness of the entire community. That inevitably has an effect directly on us. In addition to that, the obvious interest and emphasis that OSU is placing on collaboration means that the opportunity to create new collaborative efforts, it just grows and grows and grows. And because that tends to interest people from all walks of life and from all different interests in the arts, there's this cross-pollination that happens and everybody wins.
Also, I think, you know, I think it more is more and more is better. More is always better because I think, as you said, it just feeds each other. If you have more of the same thing all the time, that's not so good. But
right.
What you're talking about is a lot of variety, which collaboration is about, with dance, with opera, with theater, with music, with the visual arts, etc. The Short North, I know, has been booming partly because of the galleries that are down there. So that will be part of the corridor of the arts initiative between the city and the campus. Right. I want Steve to ask you, because I really want people to understand what Shadowbox is. And I asked you off mic. My assumption was you present shows that you and yours write and create, mm-hmm. original material mostly. And you have singers and actors and dancers and musicians. And my assumption was they probably are jobbed in for, you know, $10 a week and whatever. Not so.
No,
talk
no.
to me.
In fact, we have 44 full-time professional performers at Shadowbox. They work year-round, don't get nearly enough time off. But the beauty of it is it's made us the largest resident theater company in America, and that has allowed us to produce at a level that most people can't mimic. We produce, in this particular year, 2014, we'll have 23 unique shows that we're producing this year for over 500 performances. You can't do that when you're jobbing in people a little bit at a time. You need folks that are absolutely dedicated so that they can be learning two or three new shows while they're performing in a couple of shows, while they're writing yet another show. It takes just this massive tribe of individuals to accomplish something at this level. It also allows us to work very, very quickly. You know, you don't have to get to know each other. You know everything and even the worst things, and it allows you to move really fast. You also understand that there's a certain expectation that the entire tribe has of what your contribution is going to be, and you can't really dip below that level because you get pressure from absolutely everyone. So it's enormously cost-effective and fast.
When we say shows, tell me what you mean by shows.
Well, what I'm saying is we have unique performances that we've developed. For example, right now we're doing Foreplay, which is our sketch comedy and rock and roll show on Friday and Saturday nights. We do four of those performances a week. We have our lunchtime show on Friday afternoons where we're teaching our youngest performers how to do what the old timers have done for years and years.
Youngest, how old?
The youngest we generally hire is 18.
Okay, so still kids to me, to you. Yeah.
They're very much kids to me, okay. Absolutely. So anything below about 30 is a kid, yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
I mean that with love. I don't mean that, you know, the preserved
way. So there's lots of training that occurs there because I've got to help those folks compete with the Stacey Boards of the world who've got 10,000 performances under their belt. And then on Wednesday and Thursday, we do our stage two shows, which is extremely experimental. That's Madness and Lust right now. We took Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights and did a dance theater production. We won a bunch of awards for that show. It's absolutely a knockout. And you don't expect to see that from Shadowbox because nobody thinks of us as a dance company, even though we dance in every show we do.
Everybody moves.
That's right.
Everybody
and
moves.
In order to translate Bronte into something really, really modern that's all visual, we had to go way outside in terms of that original material sort of approach. You know, we used a work and we adapted it terrifically to get it to do what we needed it to do, but it's been very effective. So that sort of thing is what I mean when I say a show.
So many new shows that you do, that you create, what is that process? How do you start with an idea?
Yeah, we actually have a team of folks, we call them creative team, and they get together a couple of times every week, and one of the things we do is we send out ideas to one another, and it's all about making suggestions and people getting excited. And when the fire burns hot enough, somebody says, okay, I'm going to take that, I'm going to do something with it. And as I said, that has to happen a couple of times a month in order to generate all the material that we generate. So
yeah.
it's a very aggressive process, and a lot of people are involved.
Must be a real powerhouse to spend an afternoon, even when you're not actually performing, just walking through your studio.
It is endless, boundless energy. Yeah. It's unreal.
Now, Peggy Dye, you and Shadowbox got married.
Yes.
Upper Columbus and Shadowbox got together. This is the second year with another year coming.
That's right.
I'm sure several more years coming. Talk about that collaboration. What's going on? Why would I go to the opera at Shadowbox?
Because you can have a drink while you listen to it.
Wow. I want to talk about that later because that seems to be a wonderful trend that's working. But anyway.
Yes, it definitely takes the stuffiness out of our reputation as an opera company. So that's exactly what I want to do. We love hiring young local artists, and it's a way for them to perform their roles over and over and over in a very unintimidating environment, but yet it's immediate because they're performing feet from the guests that have
I've seen
come
laps
see it.
Sit upon by pretty girls. So yeah,
it happens. Yeah. It happens.
And one guy, but okay.
That's true. Well. That's true. But it's great. It's in English. It's an hour. Steve and his team put it together for us, and then we do the music end. They come together, rehearse, and we perform like mad.
Steve is the director, right? He's the stage. You do the stagings?
I staged the first piece, La Boheme, okay. And one of the folks that works for me, Don Fry, staged The Merry Widow.
Because my feeling is that a young artist today will more likely work with a director like Steve than they would with, you know, Franco Zeffirelli or somebody mm-hmm. who's been dead for 30 years. You know, I mean, I'm just, no disrespect. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, realistically, there's no such thing. You know, these art forms are no longer ghettoized. You can't. You know, you have to be able to do everything. So I would think, what were you looking for as the result of this collaboration and what's been happening?
A couple things we were looking for. First of all, we just wanted to get out of the opera house and reach more of the community. And it was an unlikely pair, but I think we do really well. So his audience is fantastic, I have to say. And it's a good blend of opera people and Shadowbox people, but we wanted to gather a new audience, which we do. And the other thing is just give opportunities to local classical singers. There just are so few.
Well, there are few opportunities, but there's a huge block
there's
of talent.
So many. Yeah. There's so, and you know what? I'm going to Phoenix in a couple weeks to hear a couple singers that have been raised here, gone to OSU, all that stuff, and they've got these professional careers, and I'm bringing them back.
Good for you. Excellent. I want to talk more about new theaters and reconstituted buildings when we come back from our break in just a moment. But Bill Connor, obviously you were behind this collaboration between Shadowbox and Opera Columbus. How are the results? Are there even fiscal results one wants to talk about?
Well, I think, my role was being the matchmaker using your marriage analogy. And we've had two kids, Boheme and... I think what Steve has done is really created this sort of atmosphere of collaboration. And so when we started thinking about how to create new audiences for the opera, it was just obvious that we should be involved, especially with doing Boheme at the time, because the coincidence was that Shadowbox was doing Rent, and Rent is
La Boheme, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
So it just was a natural kind of fit, but it was amazing because I remember that when Steve and Peggy got together for the first time, it was just effortless, and boom, the whole thing came together.
Everybody on the same wavelength. With that thought, hold that for a moment. We're going to take a break and be back in 60 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Don't go away. Thank you, Amy Jurevich, mother of the enchanting Josie, who I understand is 8 months old today, right? So all the more reason to celebrate. I'm here with Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, from Peggy Kriadai, from Opera Columbus, and the daddy of us all, Bill Connor, who is the CEO of CAPA, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. We are talking about the arts and culture and a thriving community here in Central Ohio. And I have an idea. I would like to give out our phone number, and I want to know from people what it would take for you to become a consumer of the arts if you haven't already done so. What do you need? What really is the last push you need? So if you can keep that thought, give us a ring at 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Again, 292-8513. What would it take? Now, don't say free all the time, but what would it take for you to be a consumer, to go downtown or to go wherever they are and see Shadowbox or see the Columbus Symphony or any one of the many Kappa offerings or CATCO or whatever, because there's really no reason to stay at home in this town anymore. Bill Connor, there's a beautiful church downtown on 3rd Street behind what was the post office. Beautiful church. I've worked there before. Alas, the congregation has left, leaving behind a beautiful building. Why is that, Jermaine?
Well, I love the fact that you know about Central Presbyterian Church. The church was built in 1856, 1857. It's historic. It's stunning. From our perspective, it had done a lot of chamber work, music, recitals. And so we saw it as an opportunity to renovate it into a recital hall. And, you know, our big issue is the Southern Theater, which is about 900 seats and acoustically perfect, is completely booked year-round.
You can't get into the Southern Theater. So, everybody wants to perform there, yeah.
So we were hoping this would give us a 400-seat theater that would be an opportunity for chamber music, for other early music companies, you know, and be an opportunity for recitals, which we don't really have. And in this new town-gown relationship, the university also said that the university does almost 550 recitals a year. And so they're committing to do about 350 of those down at the church.
When the church is refigured, what do you think the capacity, seating capacity, will be?
It'll be flexible, but as much as 400.
Okay, good. So that's a good chamber music style hall.
It is.
How much work is it going to entail to make this happen with the existing structure?
The existing structure, we're going to remove the, you know, churches. Historic buildings have a tendency to have things added to them. So there's a balcony that they added, I think, in the 20s. So we're taking that down so that acoustically it won't get in the way. So that we'll go back to the Romanesque walls. We have actually, Peggy had a chance. The church built a false ceiling in the 50s. And above is some of the most beautiful stained glass.
Oh.
And our operations guy was climbing up there, made us go up to see it. It's stunning. It's this beautiful red and blue glass. So we're going to open that all the way up, and that'll become the new entrance, the reception area, the lobby for the recital hall. We just got this is just a silly little historic thing. We just got our insurance company's response. The stained glass in the church is worth $1.5 million.
Wow, you could hawk that and build it. That's wonderful.
But it's, yeah, they did some, you know, back then, there's a beautiful piece of Jesus in Gethsemane that was done by a student of Tiffany's that was at the Chicago World's Fair. It was commissioned by the Chicago World's Fair and then found its way here, so.
Are you saying that this glass, we can't see it now because of this drop? You don't know it's there.
Yeah, but you're going to see it all soon.
Yeah, so, I'm sure. Yeah. I look forward to that.
So we're thinking the whole renovation, including a new music academy, is going to be about $6-7 million.
When you say music academy, you mean a school?
Yeah, we're looking to.
Good.
You know, we with the Lincoln Theater and the partnership with the Jazz Arts Group, we were able to create a jazz academy, and now we're looking to create a music academy that would teach classical music. Voice, probably.
There's a collaboration for you.
I'm on it.
Yeah, I bet you would be. Yeah, I'm sure. That's great. Yeah.
I can only smile. She already has keys to the church, and I don't.
That's wonderful.
But the idea would.
I can give you a tour if you'd like.
Okay.
But we would do music education for kids in the public schools during the days, and then the evenings for all the kids in Central Ohio.
Now, one of the things one always hears is that this town lacks a 1,200-seat or so concert hall. If you look at Severance Hall in Cleveland or Symphony Hall in Boston, these are 1,100-seat halls that were built a century ago where the Cleveland Orchestra plays and the Boston Symphony plays, et cetera. And when you go to these halls, they're always packed. They're always packed. And my theory is that if we had a hall that size in Columbus, every Columbus Symphony concert would be sold out. And sometimes it is a little bit of a drag to look at a lot of empty seats in the Ohio Theater, not because the orchestra isn't selling, but because there's just a lot of seats. It's a 4,000-seat hall built for movies. So do you see a day when such a hall, in addition to the church, might happen in this town? Do you see the need?
I think that's the need. I think, 1,100-seat theater would be kind of the perfect theater. Right now, the Southern actually functions that way with 900 seats. But if you've been in the Southern, the third balcony, it's pretty...
You got vertigo, yes.
It's pretty challenging.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have really 650
but
very good seats.
But the stage also really doesn't fit a 90-piece orchestra comfortably.
No, it doesn't.
As beautiful as the Southern is.
So, you know, the symphony started a new series there, really with smaller orchestras, not chamber orchestra, but and ProMusica is there, and Jag is, and the Jazz Arts Group is there. So, you know, I think that that is the missing component in our community, and basically also a hall, as you would say, dedicated to music.
Right. The Columbus Symphony is performing this weekend, tonight and tomorrow at 8 in the Ohio Theater. There's a wonderful cellist, Zuil Bailey, who is the soloist. He'll play the Dvorak Cello Concerto. Jacques Lacombe is the conductor, guest conductor. And on the program, music from Peer Gynt by Grieg. Let's hear a little cut right now. You know this, even if you don't know, you know this. That's music from Grieg's Peer Gynt. That's just a bit of the morning mood there. Music you will hear tonight and tomorrow in the Ohio Theater, conducted by Jacques Lacombe. You mentioned that the frigid snap affected ticket sales briefly, but now we're back up and running. People don't want to make phone calls when it's bunker mentality when it's 10 below zero.
It hurts all of us. Steve and I were talking outside. You know, it's just when you have a below zero for 3 or 4 days, people stop thinking about being outside. So the beauty is, you know, we're very lucky here. We have great audiences. Mm-hmm. I think audiences lead the arts in our community. And so, yeah, they bounce back today. So we're looking forward to a good weekend.
I also want to make clear that the idea of all of the audiences in Columbus for the arts is 50 and over is a myth. If you went to Opera Columbus's Madame Butterfly, I was probably the oldest one there, and I'm 50 and above. You are skewing it younger, and I'm not sure how you're doing that, but you are. Anybody have a theory about why that's happening?
I think that there's the variety of programming that's out there right now has changed the perspective of the audience. They don't have this perception of, hey, it's all about gray hair and business suits. We've also backed away from that whole business suit notion. You know, it's perfectly fine to be comfortable and enjoy the entire experience and not feel that you've got to dress up or anything. You can. And that's a beautiful social convention that's changed. It allows people to kind of express themselves in whatever way they're comfortable.
Nobody, and even if you don't get very dressy, nobody looked out of place. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, jeans and a T-shirt look just as well next to somebody in an expensive dress or whatever. Yeah. Right. Bill Connor, I'm going to make you tell the story you told me a while back about having a drink in the theater. About you gave a wonderful, serious presentation, and you got some feedback from an audience member. Can you tell that story?
I will. I was going to thank you because Steve's been very far ahead of us. So we decided we wanted to change our audience, and we put together about a 20-person focus group of people 35 or younger. And so we were going through, and we thought it was going to be about programming or ticket pricing. And this woman said, no, you know, you guys are silly. You don't let us drink in the theater. And, you know, the Southern, we have these beautiful church-like, gorgeous spaces that my board doesn't let us even take water into. And so this woman goes, oh, no, we have to be able to drink in the theater. I said, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe we could do wine. Maybe we could do white wine. And this was a young lawyer. And she looked at me and she said, are you trying to tell us what we can and can't drink? So I was pretty intimidated. But I have to say that this is very true, that since then we have gotten we now serve alcohol and food in the theaters for the orchestra and the opera, which is taboo. And I just came from the League of American Symphony Orchestra meetings, and I have five other colleagues that have all started doing it now as well. So it really has been a very easy thing that's changed audience age for us almost overnight.
When you say be comfortable, you mean it. Be comfortable. Enjoy. Come and enjoy.
Peggy will tell you the truth. My only fear right now is kids won't eat candy in the theater. So I go and buy Twizzlers, and I walk over and give them to
my son. My kids have cavities, thanks to Bill.
I was going to say, you might encounter some parents who don't want the kids sugar-hopped, but that's all right. Peggy, give me a little bit of an idea of what has been happening with Opera Columbus in the Southern Theater. We know what's going on at Shadowbox, but what you just had the first sort of locally cast Madame Butterfly.
Yeah, locally produced, sold out. It was quite an experience. Well, you know you were there. It was amazing. And because of that, we are jumping into a 3-opera season. starting next year.
Oh, opera, give me a break. It's boring. It's fat people screaming at each other. What do I need this for? Forget about it. It's a little fruity. I have no time for this. Discuss.
You really think people say that? I don't think people say that.
Well, I'm just making you a worst case scenario of selling it.
I can sell it. No problem.
I know you can.
Okay. So Opryland has everything. We've got the spectacle. We've got the costumes, the lights, the set. Often we have dance, drama. Okay. Sex, yes. And death. All the good stuff.
Two great things. Sex and death.
Sex and death. That's right. In fact, we're going to have sex and death over at the Shadowbox next season.
Yeah.
But it's got everything. And it's performed by people that are in their 30s as well. So it's more relatable than people think. And that's why I try to get it out everywhere, because I'm like, it's just not what it's not your parents' opera. It's different.
Well, as you said, I was there for Madame Butterfly in the audience. And somebody came up to me and said, where are the microphones? And I said, they don't use microphones. And mm-hmm. he said, how is that possible? I said, well, that's the training. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. You don't need a microphone. So there are no microphones. Mm-hmm. You're hearing actual, real, unadulterated sound. Nothing
right.
between you and the experience.
That's right. I always say it's like the Olympics of singing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people can sing, but not, or a lot of people can, are athletic, but few make it to the Olympics. And that's how I view operatic singing. It's very, the technique takes years and years and years. I should have I should be able to do surgery for all the education I've had.
a footnote, not more than a footnote. You yourself are a very fine soprano, and you're going to be singing with Pro Musica in February. Is that right?
That's right. We're doing Mozart's Great Mass in C minor. So yes, I have a coaching on that today.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Now, what's going on? Can you talk about what the titles, what we're going to be seeing in the next couple of years at Upper Columbus?
Sure. Well,
I'll tell them anyway.
We open our season with Ballet Met and the Symphony all together in the Ohio for a Columbus Spectacular. So it's called Confessions. Okay, so I hope Edward just heard that. So it's called Confessions.
Write this down, Edward.
It's called Confessions, and it's the best of opera tied together by an intriguing story. We're hoping to get, can I say this? We're hoping to get John Lithgow to be our narrator. He's looking at the script now.
That's
so
great.
That'll be fabulous. We've gotten some great input from Steve. So I thought you'd be happy to hear we're having a narrator. That was his suggestion. So it's the best of opera, and there's dance woven with opera. This orchestra is on stage. It's just going to be an event. Then we move on to The Marriage of Figaro.
Oh, good.
And we're going to do it in English.
I was asking. I think that's great. Good for
you. Yes. I went back and forth, and of course, there's so many people with opinions about that. But how can you do comedy in a different language? Yeah,
can't. It translates very well into English.
It really does. Yeah. It does. So we're doing that, and that will be locally produced. And then we end the season with this double bill of La Voix Humaine. Do you know that piece?
I do indeed.
By Poulenc?
Yes, The Human Voice, yes.
Yes, and then it's paired with Paiacci. So we're introducing it in the fall as an opera in the hour, English, you know, Shadowbox thing. And that way, the people that have just been introduced to opera know the show and say, okay, I can go back to the last show of their season because I know it. In fact, one of the singers will be trying out that role and then performing it for us on the main stage.
Are you doing La Voix Humaine yourself? Are you doing
No, but guess who I am?
Who?
Guess who is?
Who?
Elizabeth Futrell.
Oh, really? No kidding. She's
no
terrific.
No kidding.
First of all, she's a looker, folks, okay?
Yeah.
She's a beautiful woman and with a beautiful voice. That's wonderful.
Yes, yeah.
La Voix Humaine is a one-woman show. She's on the phone with her lover who has abandoned her, and she basically spends an hour pleading with him to come back. But that sounds banal, but trust me.
She's laying on a bed in a negligee for an hour. Elizabeth Futrell, singing in French. Come on.
You know, get real. Okay,
yeah.
With Pagliacci, which is blood, guts, and sex, and jealousy, and a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So no reason not to go to Opera Columbus this year. We're going to talk more about the possibility of new theaters and collaborations as we continue. Bill Connor, you said to me that Steve Geyer and Shadowbox basically made collaboration possible in this town. What do you mean by that?
That's the statement. I mean, Steve is a very collaborative artist, and I think that, you know, Shadowbox is a very elastic company that, you know, the whole world of theater has changed. Once upon a time, you wanted to be a classical performer. Today, you need to be a triple threat if you can't act and sing and dance. And so Shadowbox can be involved with dance companies or with theater companies or opening the Columbus Commons. I mean, it's a pretty elastic opportunity. And I think, you know, Steve, if Steve starts opening up talking about the different kind of collaborations, people will be very surprised how many and how deep they are.
I'm going to give him the mic as we come back from break. But just in the few minutes we have left before the break, you mentioned Columbus Commons, which has been the home of the CSL Pops. What else goes on? There's always something going on down there, even if the weather isn't perfect. If you try to park along there, you can't. So tell me about Columbus Commons.
Well, the Commons has been a huge success. And, you know, this year from winter festivals that have happened with fireworks at all. And you know, soon the summer, I think, is the key. So, we were able to relocate Picnic with the Pops 2 years ago, and that was a huge success for us. This year, I know the Commons is going to be doing a number of other concerts, other free concerts. And I think that everything from Pelotonia has moved down to the Commons. And the apartment buildings are now complete and actually along High Street. And they're all low, you know, they're people are moving in as we speak. So the downtown is changed so dramatically.
But it seems to me now that they're at the very highest levels of politics and, frankly, money in this town. There is a real effort now to make that happen, to redo downtown and make it a destination even on a Wednesday night, not just a weekend, which I don't think was true. I think that's only become true in the last couple of years.
You're right. And, you know, what's nice for us is once upon a time, you know, it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday kind of world for us with audiences. And today, all the things that you were talking about in terms of younger audiences, Thursday has become the hot night for us, and especially for younger, you know, non-55-year-old people who aren't our age.
Going where? The younger crowd, where? Going where? To any of your presentations?
To everything.
Catco?
Yeah. I mean, we just did We Will Rock You. Thursday night, you couldn't get in. You know, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm.
They're too young. They don't know from Queen if they're in their 20s, really. Yeah,
that was a scary moment.
That's my era, and I don't have the energy to sort of go to Queen anymore. We're going to talk a bit more with Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, with Peggy Kriya Dye, Opera Columbus, and Bill Connor from Kappa when we come back after this break. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. Thank you, Amy. We're back for our last segment with this discussion about the arts and culture in Central Ohio, the very vibrant, and I probably wouldn't say that 4 or 5 years ago, arts and culture scene in Central Ohio now, with Steve Geyer, who is the CEO, Artistic Director of Shadowbox downtown, with Peggy Kriya Dye, soprano and director of Opera Columbus, and Bill Connor, tenor and director of Kappa, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. And there's a lot going on. The High Street corridor from campus to downtown is being rethought and revamped with the possibility of new theaters and a bona fide collaboration between town and gown, with Ohio State becoming what it has the potential to be and needs to be, which is a real arts destination, campus itself, which is being done with the help of my three guests for this program. Steve Geyer, what's going on at Shadowbox now if I wanted to take a crowd and go down and have a nice time down in the brewery district in your place? What would I see?
Well, if you want to go down.
Choice from?
Yeah, right now we're wrapping up the musical series Spamalot, and in a couple of weeks we open Into the Woods. So we're very excited about that. I think it's going to be a terrific show. Got a great cast, and a pretty fun approach to it. It's going to be a very dark musical. And then, of course, it's the sketch comedy and rock and roll shows that are rolling along. Four plays up and running now. Out of Control opens in about 6 weeks. And on Wednesday and Thursday nights, we're currently doing Madness and Lust. And then we have Bigger Than Jesus coming after that. Yes,
okay.
you heard it here.
I'm so glad I didn't say that.
It's the story of Pope Francis.
Okay.
Actually, it's a rockumentary about the Beatles.
Terrific.
And, we're just taking John's
I remember
words.
That from the late 60s. I
yeah,
remember that.
Exactly.
That was a big scandal then, and you'll make it one now. That's wonderful.
Exactly.
Now, you can also you can dine and drink at Shadowbox.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have an actual restaurant. It's not a snack bar.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good food.
Yeah, it's very good food. Right.
And it's been fantastic for us. You know, when we first started Shadow 25 years ago, my partner at that time, Becky Gentile, said, look, if I'm going to go and sit in a theater, I want to be able to eat and drink. And so we said, okay, all right, I guess that's what we'll do.
So that's one arts organization we know you can eat and drink at. In fact, you're expected to when you go to Shadowbox and have a good time. And CAP is moving that way as well to make everybody a little buzzed and comfortable. You have, Bill Connor, you have several shows, several big book shows coming in. Let's talk.
Well, over at the Ohio, we have Phantom of the Opera coming back. Hasn't been with us for 8 years.
Is that the one where you had to rebuild the Palace Theater? You had to knock down a wall?
It was the Ohio. We actually added 25 feet behind the theater so we could actually have Phantom come, and we put all steel in for the dropping of the chandelier.
Did that pay for itself when the show ran?
Mm-hmm.
Did it really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We ran 8 weeks. I mean, it was unbelievable the first time. So we have it coming for 2 weeks. It is really, really selling. It'll start its first performance is on Tuesday, March 5th. And then Adam's Family is coming to the Palace for a week. And then the biggie for us this year is Book of Mormon, which comes in mid-May 13th.
Now, that's a title. That's been a huge, huge hit, that show. It's a title that might confuse people. So let's talk. What is the Book of Mormon about?
Wow. It is the...
Gotcha.
Well, it's hard to tell everybody about what it means and without, like, violating all these different laws. So Amy's already looking at me.
No, not again. No. Yeah.
No, Book of Mormon is a wonderful look, tongue-in-cheek look at the religion and actually the Bible for the Mormon community, the Church of Latter-day Saints. And it starts with Jesus. The thesis is that when Jesus dies, he comes back to North America to, like, the Mayans or whatever. But it follows two young Mormons who are on their year. They have a year that they go out to evangelize. And the one Mormon really knows that God wants him to go to Orlando. And the other guy is kind of the screw-up guy, and he could care less. And they end up going to Uganda. And after that, it is unbelievable. I don't want to spoil anything at that point. But it is honestly one of the funniest, most irreverent. And in the end, as a theater person, a pure Rodgers and Hammerstein musical that is, you know, you have tears and you're feeling good about it, but it's quite the emotional journey.
There's wonderful irony in that show that's kind of loving in the same way. It's the Book of Mormon. It's a hit for a reason, and it's coming to town.
It's going to be here on May 13, but not to be totally crass, but on Thursday of next week, we're going to put it on sale for single tickets. So
hurry up.
It would be a good time because this will definitely sell out.
Right. Now, also bring us up to date on Catco, one of my favorite companies, which CAPA also manages.
Well, we do back office services
with
Steven Anderson. Yeah, so I think Catco's had a great season both last year and this year, and they're just finishing up a hit run of Forbidden Broadway. So
they brought that back because people love to see that. Yeah.
And it has some of my favorite moments. Has send-ups of Wicked and Phantom and almost everything that's completely religiously sacred to me. They make fun of, and then they're opening some two new plays coming up next week. So it's been a good year for them. Christmas Carol. And, you know, Phoenix is the other part, which is the children's theater. So it's been a successful
year.
It's
wonderful. Yeah. You've covered every base between the three of you. You cover really every base in town. Now, I have asked people if they wanted to call in, 292-8513, to tell us what they need to make them audience members to the wide variety of the arts in Central Ohio. What kind of programming? What kind of pricing? What kind of availability? What do you need? What's stopping you after all the conversation we're having? So I want to, as we wait for calls, you can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. What does the community like, I guess is what's fair to ask from all three of you?
Well, I just say what the symphony just did last year last month, and we're getting ready to do again. We started a new series called Happy Hour, and it starts at 5:30, and it's on Wednesdays. And we have free food and open bars, and the concerts are reduced. It's a 60-minute concert. We've had some incredibly good conductors. It's general admission seating, so you just go wherever you want.
It's free, isn't it?
And it's completely free.
It's free. Just show up.
And we thought the first time we did it, because we've never done it before, we might have 300 people come, and we had 1,500 people come.
Right.
So we're getting ready to do our second happy hour on Wednesday, February 12th. Daniel Myers is coming to conduct. And again, it's the same format. We've learned a lot. So this time I have an army an army of bartenders. So only Steve can laugh because he understands how many.
Yeah. So you can come for free. You can sit anywhere in the theater you like. You can get you can have free munchies and a cash bar on February 12th in the Ohio Theater. And let's not parenthetically, you can hear the Columbus Symphony in a wonderful new conductor.
And the symphony is playing, as you know, right now, the symphony is playing as good as ever.
They've turned several corners in the last few years.
Yeah.
And this weekend, let's remind them this weekend, they can hear Dvorak's cello concerto. They can hear that tonight and tomorrow night, as well as the symphony in B minor by César Franck and music from Peer Gynt by Grieg. Let's hear track two now. Let's hear In the Hall of the Mountain King, because you know this. That's music by the Norwegian composer Edvard Grieg from Peer Gynt. That music you will hear performed tonight and tomorrow live with the Columbus Symphony, conducted by Jacques Lacombe. It's going to be a great evening. They call it an all-romantic evening. If you're looking for date night, look no further. Columbus Symphony in the Ohio Theater. And you have a big way to end the season, which probably involves all three of you, with Carmen, with the opera Carmen. How are you going to do Carmen with a big orchestra in the Ohio Theater?
Carmen is going to be semi-staged. So all the artists will be in all their glamour downstage, on stage with the orchestra. So it's sliced a little bit. So there'll be some cuts just to make it a comfortable evening for everybody. But it's going to be fantastic. Jean-Marie Zétany, that's his thing. This is his favorite opera. Yeah. So this is really going to be great.
It's in semi-staged in concerts. You have a big chorus. I would think the OSU collaboration is going to be useful for you there.
Yes, I mean, every great singer in town will be in that chorus. It's going to be fabulous.
Bill, the Columbus Symphony is in the midst of a music director search. The last time that happened, it seemed to go on a long time, and you were coming out of a kind of a bad time for the symphony anyway. That's no longer true at all. What's going on with the search? What does the search entail? What does the music director do?
Oh, well, you know, the music director for us is like being the artistic director in theater. So puts the season together, works with our players to keep the orchestra at its highest level, looks at when we have vacancies, does all the auditioning, particularly for our principal positions, creates the tone of, not the tone of culture of who and what we are as an orchestra. And, you know, and in many ways, more today than ever, becomes the spokesperson in the community, at all levels in the community.
So aside from being a wonderful musician, what does this person have to have? What does the ideal candidate have to be like?
The pressure is different than it once was. I think you're right. Once upon a time, you just had to be a great musician. And if you were a wonderful conductor, then that was what it meant to be a music director. Today, the person really has to be able to work with the board, with the staff, be an inspirational leader for the administrative staff, not just for the musicians, be a part of the community, literally a part of the community, whether that means sitting on the chamber or Experience Columbus or whatever other pieces of the community help make Columbus what Columbus is.
And we have a call from Kate, who wants to know about audio descriptions. Hi, Kate. Welcome.
Yes. Is anything happening with audio description these days?
Good question. That is for people who are maybe challenged in their hearing. What are you doing about that? Anything?
Well, for audio description, you know, because we get to work in many different areas, you know, for Broadway, we have been doing audio descriptions for a long time, and we also have been doing signed performances. I think what you'll see now over with, you know, on the opera side, it's even better because usually if the opera is done in French or German,
even in English
now, you know, we have you can follow it along and read the.
We have the titles above the stage.
The surtitles are right above. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And over at the Drexel, you know, we now have new technology which allows you both to. You can put it's really neat. You put it on. It's like glasses. and you can hear the vibration of the score or the show itself. But if you look up, the subtitles are just streaming for you, so you can watch the movie and the subtitles at the same time,
which sometimes in the opera you are doing this a little bit. But
technology for us has really helped make, I think, access a much better place.
I remember, Peggy, you're probably too young to have ever seen an opera that was not titled. But most of us, we're used to, you either knew the French, German, or Italian,
wow,
or you didn't, And I'll tell you a story about my mother. Years ago, I took her to see Madame Butterfly in Boston a long time ago, and it wasn't titled. It was titled. It was one of the first ones that was titled. And she said, well, for God's sake, who knew that poor girl was stood up by that awful man? Her language is a little stronger than that, but it made a difference. It made an enormous difference, and it's now 30 years since operas began to be titled. So what I'm saying is, if you don't know and you think it's in a foreign language, probably it is, but it will be translated for you above the stage, just like in a movie. So mm-hmm. you can follow along exactly what goes on.
Do you know, I was watching The Hobbit with my son. And I wanted to stand up and scream in that theater. They're speaking in this funky language that they've created, and there they have surtitles. I'm the Hobbit. I said, really? Are people really going to say this is not accessible? They don't even realize it's part of their life outside as well.
Well, we're all about accessibility these days. Without diluting, there was certainly titles for the opera years ago were a scandal because they were thought it was just ruining
disruptive.
The art form. The head of the Metropolitan Opera said over his dead body, would they ever? And he got over that pronto. I would think there's no kind of subtitle needed for anything Shadowbox does, but do people come in with any kind of perceived idea about what they're going to see, or is that part of the fun? You have no idea when you go to Shadowbox what's going on.
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, we've got a reputation now for simply doing good work, and so it's okay to come and not know what you're going to see. We have, interestingly, a collaboration coming up with the Museum of Art where we're doing 22 pieces from their permanent collection. We've written a song cycle for the entire 22 pieces. It's a couple hours long. There's dance, there's vocals, there's spoken word, and video that celebrates the art for this two-hour period. And it's a perfect example of no one having any idea what it's going to be because it's never been done before.
So we know what the pictures are, but we don't know what you're going to do with the pictures, and probably you didn't either until you began doing it.
That's right.
Right,
that's
okay.
Absolutely right.
When will that be performed? When
can say that? May 1st through the 4th at Shadowbox.
At Shadowbox. That's mm-hmm. terrific. That's a collaboration you wouldn't think of, really, mm-hmm. between Shadowbox and... How did that come about? Because Nanette Macy-Jones and you were so smart, which I believe.
Nanette may be. For me, it wasn't smart at all. For me, it was being in love with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer back in high school, and I was listening to pictures at an exhibition.
You have to look that up. I'm certain you did.
And so, yeah, I got inspired by the notion that a composer could be inspired by artwork. And it's been kind of sitting back there for a long time. And Nancy Turner at the Museum of Art came to me once and said, hey, we'd really love to do something with you. And I'm like, I have no idea what to do. Literally remembered that Emerson, Lake, and Palmer piece and went back and said, well, would you be interested in this sort of thing? And you know, they're very, very open. They've been extraordinary to work with in terms of their ability to communicate with us and give us the information we needed. And it allowed this thing to germinate and has now become a project that I'm incredibly excited about.
What further kinds of collaborations are each of you looking for, Bill? What would be really fun, just crazy, and an idea that would be great, do you think?
Well, some of them have already started. I think that this new collaboration that's going to open the seasons for the Symphony of the Opera and the Ballet Met at the same time has never been done before.
That's the Carmen, right?
It's currently being
the Confessions is what I'm calling it.
Right, but I mean, I got to be in this meeting with Edward and Peggy, and it became obvious that at a few moments that people are really out of the box now, and so this is really not a dance piece.
There is no more box.
There's no more box.
We can't have a box now.
We got to a moment, and Edward looked at Peggy and goes, "No, this is a new art form. And right. It is. And so I think people are really very flexible now. And so we're doing things that don't fit in boxes. It's not like we're collaborating with the symphony to do opera or with CATCO to do masterclass. I mean, that's an obvious one. But some of these, like what's happening with the museum, is intensely creative and out there.
Right. So you fostered, I think there's an environment now that buzz is a favorite word of mine, and I use it too often, but there is a buzz going on about the arts from garage bands to symphony orchestras here in Columbus. And with that, we have to say goodbye with my thanks to Bill Connor, who is the CEO of Kappa, who wore his baseball cap for us today. Steve Geyer, who is the CEO of Shadowbox, thank you for coming in, and especially pleasure. Peggy Dye for coming in and being with us at the last minute, Opera Columbus. We appreciate everybody being here. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend. Thanks to Amy Jurevich. Good afternoon.